Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Greetings, podcastlings. It's Chris. All right, quick business to get out of the way before we start the Nerdist Podcast number 14. First of all, I would like to thank you personally because in just 2 short months, we amassed over 1 million downloads for the Nerdist Podcast, which is mind-blowing. We didn't expect that, and we really, really, really appreciate your support. So thank you, thank you, thank you 1 million times. Also, if you're going to be in Los Angeles on Tuesday, May 11th, we're going to be doing the Nerdist Podcast live at Largo. It's going to be an all-music show, and our special guests will be Paul and Storm, Mike Furman, and Tom Lennon, who you probably know from Reno 911 in the state. Also, a very, very special guest, whose name I can't tell you, but it is a very, very, very special guest. Trust me. All right, so let's get into this episode. Today's guest is Mr. Stan Lee. Now, I've met Stan before. He is an amazing guy, super sweet. He's funny, he's charming, he's self-deprecating. I mean, you just want to kidnap the guy and force him to be your grandfather. So we did this chat on April 14th at the National Association of Broadcasters in Las Vegas. And the NAB is basically an event that's been going on for 80 years where content providers from all platforms come together and display their wares. If you're ever in Vegas and it's going on, you should go and you can get more information about their organization at nabshow.com. So Stan and I did a pretty standard Q&A in front of a huge group of people who were super excited that he was there. And then they got to ask questions afterwards. And all in all, I think everyone had a great time. I had a good time. I hope Stan had a good time. I know the crowd there had a good time. Jimmy J.J. Walker had good times. Jonah probably didn't have a great time because he wasn't there. Matt had a decent time. He wasn't on the show, but he was running the board. His time was probably made much better by the fact that somewhere in his heart he was thinking of a Dave Matthews song. And hopefully, you will have a good time as I present to you the Nerdist Podcast number 14 with Stan Lee. Excelsior.
Now entering Nerdist.com. Please welcome Chris Hardwick and Stan Lee.
Hello, everybody. Hi. I don't like you getting as big an introduction as I did. You know, we'll talk later.
I don't know. To be fair, I think in the contract I got 3 less sentences than you, so you're still the main guest.
Well, so how do you like me being an opening act? You know, the first guy to warm up the audience till the really good ones come.
Till the magician comes out. Yeah.
Well, that's the way it goes.
Thank you guys for coming out at 9 o'clock in the morning in Las Vegas.
How about thanking me for coming out this early?
Oh,
jeez, think it was easy.
We'll get to you, Stan Lee.
I'm afraid of that.
So, Stan, you were born under the name Stanley Lieber.
Stanley Martin Lieber.
Stanley Martin Lieber. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you changed your name to Stan Lee because there was this idea that comic books were sort of at the bottom of the cultural totem pole. So what was, can you just give us a little concept of what it was like to go into comics in the 1940s?
Sure. Actually, I changed my name because the cops were after me.
Okay.
That's another story. In the 1940s, being in the comic book business, I was like Rodney Dangerfield. You got no respect. I mean, I'd go to a party with my wife, and somebody would come over, hey, what do you do? I knew what was going to happen. So I'd say, I'm a writer, and I'd try to walk away. And they'd say, oh, what do you write? So I'd say, magazine stories, and I'd walk a little further, and they'd keep following. Finally, I had to say comic books, at which time the person would turn around and walk away. Of course, now it's different. Now I'm in a room somewhere, and somebody says, wait a minute, that's Stan Lee. Excuse me, President Obama, I got to talk to
you. Yes, exactly. Why did comic books have such a stigma attached to them?
Well, I can only tell you what my publisher told me in those early days, in the late 40s, 50s. Stan, don't use words of more than two syllables. Don't give me talk about characterization and plot. Give me a lot of action. Mm-hmm. I want a lot of fight scenes, because our readers are either very young kids or illiterate adults. And that's what the publisher thought of the public, of his readers. So nobody ever thought that anybody who was educated would read a comic, you know? And that was the business I was in, you know, terrible.
But obviously it worked out pretty well. So when did you start to notice that, oh wait, actually comic books, this is actually a viable career. This can actually be my primary career, that I don't have to be ashamed of it.
Well, it really started with the Fantastic Four. You know, when you're in conversation this way, mm-hmm. I never know whether to look at you or look at the people. So I'm trying to do both. I'm sort of an equal opportunity
In the television biz, we cheat out. That guy wants you to look at him.
All right, I'm looking at him. Anyway, the question was, when did I know? Mm-hmm. See, I like to summarize these things for you. I know you have a short interest span. When did I realize that we were on?
Wait a minute, aren't you Stan Lee? I'm sorry, I just checked out for a second.
We were on to something, right? It was after the Fantastic Four. That was the first book we did where I said, the hell with it. I'm going to try to let them talk like real people might mm-hmm. talk and react to each other and have personalities and so forth. And I was trying to be realistic in the sense, if Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, mm-hmm. don't go telling anybody,
right.
If Johnny Storm was going to drive a car, it wouldn't be a whiz-bang V8. It would be a Chevy Corvette. Mm-hmm. And if they were going to go to a movie, they wouldn't go to the Bijou. They'd go to the Radio City Music Hall. And they lived in east side of downtown Manhattan and so forth, instead of Metropolis or Gotham City. I want that to be realistic. Well, after a while, we started getting fan mail. Now, we had never had fan mail before. All of a sudden, I got letters written in crayon. Then, after a while, they were written in pencil. Then they were written in ink. Later on, I started getting some that were typed. And suddenly, the return addresses were from a high school and a college. I said, we're on to something.
That's nice.
And that's what happened. It was when the emails started coming in. And the first impressive thing that happened, I'll never forget, four kids who were members of the Cleosophic Society, and I don't know what that means, from Princeton, came to the office, and they wanted to make me an honorary member of the Princeton Cleosophic Society. So I said, we have arrived. Comic books have now reached the proper level.
I think Cleosophic means crayon, right?
Thanks very much.
So
couldn't there be some academician who was interviewing me instead of... I'm sorry.
Stan Lee, that rapier wit.
In conversation with me is what I meant.
He said this was going to happen. You know, I was going to bring this up a lot later in the interview, but I've been following your tweets. as a loyal fan would, and
that makes you a brigadier. See, I have my own brigade.
I'm a brigadier.
You're all welcome to join, but you have to start as privates. Later on, I may give you a battlefield promotion, but that comes in time.
I think automatic promotion for getting in line at 8 o'clock in the morning at the convention center for everyone, but. So I'm also friends with Craig Ferguson, and I talked to Craig last night, and I know that you guys have a Twitter war that is afoot. And I spoke to Craig so I could get a statement from him to see what he wanted to contribute. And Craig said, "Stan, I respect your legacy, I respect your talent, and I will destroy you."
The man doesn't know what he's up against.
So what were the early, I'm just curious to know what the early comic book conventions were like. What were the early Comic-Cons like?
Oh, they were a lot different than they are today. I don't know how many of you have been to a comic book convention lately, but the way they used to be, they were all kids, little kids. And occasionally, you'd see an adult or two, the parents who the kids dragged to the place because they were too young to come by themselves. Now, all you see are grown-ups with a few kids that they couldn't leave at home because they couldn't get a babysitter. And it's a totally different thing. And if, for example, the biggest convention is the one in San Diego. They get over 150,000 people there, I think. And it's all movie people, television people, media people. You wouldn't understand that.
I don't know what those words are. Yeah, no, I don't know.
And they're all looking for the next hot movie, the next hot TV show. And the poor kids, they're outside with their noses pressed against the window, wishing they could get in.
Do you think that's... I mean, I know it's good for the business as a whole, but do you think it's bad in the sense that, you know, comic books aren't necessarily, you know, an underground phenomenon anymore? They are so mainstream and corporate. I mean, is that good? Is it bad? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think it's bad because young people, old people, they can still buy them and read them and mm-hmm. they can still enjoy them. And I was exaggerating a little bit. They can still go to comic book conventions no matter what their age. When you say corporate, they were always corporate. I mean, comic books, even in the early rotten days, were owned by companies, you know, sure. by corporations. It's just that now they're more respected because everybody realizes if I read a comic book and I think it's good, there's a good chance it'll be a $200 million movie in another few years.
Yeah, that's the thing. It seems like, you know, when you were first making comic books, you obviously weren't thinking, I wonder how this is going to look in a shot. Like, you were just trying to tell a story.
How do you know what I was thinking?
I own a TARDIS. I traveled back in time and spoke to you 60 years ago. TARDIS, three people, Doctor Who. I mean, what's your process like when you're sitting down to, you know, when you come up with this character, any character, what's the process? Does it just kind of come to you in the shower, or do you sit down and say, I'm going to make one of the biggest comic book heroes ever today?
Well, years ago when I thought of things, I wasn't thinking it'll be one of the biggest comic book hero. I was thinking, I hope the book sells, so I'll keep my job, and I'll be able to pay my rent every mm-hmm. month. And that was about as far as your aspirations went in those days. Now, of course, if I think of something, I say, hey, this would make a good movie, and I think it'll be a great line of toys, and a TV series is certain to follow, and, you know, you think a little bit higher level.
This guy would look great on jammies, something
right.
you might say. Yeah. Do you have any tales from the Stan Lee rejection bin? Are there some characters that you were excited about that you could just never just make work, or, you know, that you really wanted to work?
Now, this will sound terrible, but every one of them worked. I mean, you see, I never had a rejection, but it's not as good as it sounds. I'll explain. I was the editor-in-chief. I was in charge creatively. I'm also my biggest fan. So if ever I would come up with an idea, I'd say, gee, that's great. And I'd say, let's do it, because I was the guy who said, let's do it. So everything that I did, I thought was terrific. And so I got no rejections because I would have been the rejector, and
right.
I'm not going to reject my own stuff.
Right.
I don't know if that answers your question, but I'm trying to be, you can tell, I'm trying to be as honest and forthright with you people as possible, and I hope it's appreciated.
So what is it? I think they appreciate it.
Take that, Craig Ferguson.
Oh, snap. It's on, Scotsman. So how do you, you know, how do you feel that comic, because obviously, you know, we're such a visually interactive society now with, you know, with that now everyone's 3D and 3D TV and 3D movies. But how do you feel that comic books tell a story in a way that maybe, you know, a movie or a television show can't?
Well, every form of the media tells a story in ways that others can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, a movie tells a story in a way that a television show can't. The television show tells a story in the way that a magazine can't or a newspaper. They're all different. A comic book is really like when you do storyboards for a movie. The good thing about comics now, people in Hollywood really don't have the time, and most of them don't have the interest, to read a full script. So if somebody wants to sell a script to a movie company, a distributor, producer, there's very little chance the guy is going to read it. But it's so easy for anybody to look at a comic book. You can thumb through it in a couple of minutes and say, hey, wow, these pictures are great. Oh, that scene would look terrific on the screen. There's a lot of action. Yeah, I want to do this movie.
So you're talking about studio heads. We're going back to the illiterate adults from before who have
just
to look
about,
at
and that's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
I can't think of a concept with words alone. I have a lot of friends who tried to sell scripts and they couldn't, and so they said, well, I'll just make it into a comic book. And then they ended up selling
just the way it happens, yeah. I wish I had stayed in comics. What an idiot I am. Shows you how smart I am. When comics are bigger than ever, I'm not doing... Oh, well, I am doing some, come to think of it, yeah. So that's okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have POW Entertainment.
POW is working with a company called Boom. Mm-hmm. We're doing some comics. And of all companies, the Archie Company, we're doing a new kind of superhero for the Archie books. And we just did a comic book that's doing very well in Japan called Ultimo, and it'll come over here as a movie or a TV series soon. And we're doing a cartoon in Japan, an animated cartoon called Hero Man, which will probably come over here sooner or later. And we're very big in Japan. The Chinese are jealous, but I'll make time for them later. I forgot what the question was. Hey, I got to tell you something.
Doesn't matter.
No, I got to tell you something.
Please.
I've done in conversation with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You're really good.
You what?
No, you really are.
Are you kidding?
This guy is good.
Are you? Come on.
All right, that's all.
All right.
I was only kidding.
That's all I get. So now what's the process for you when you're creating stuff? I mean, is it literally just, you, go make that? Or do you sit down to write, or like what's your process?
Well, luckily, I'm still my biggest fan, so I like everything I do, but I don't have time to actually do the finished writing.
Right.
So what I do is I try to come up with an idea that would make a good movie, television show, whatever, and then we try to get the best screenwriter or comic book writer or whatever to do it, and I sort of supervise it, or I'm the executive producer, mm-hmm. or whatever that might. Actually, I'm also very lucky. I have a partner, a fellow I work with, named Gil Champion, who had been a really terrific producer years ago, and now he's part of the management team of POW Entertainment. And this guy really knows movies and television, and he's been I'll come up with an idea. I say, hey, I think it would be great. We have Spider-Man. Maybe we'll have Mosquito Man. And he'll say, oh, Mosquito Man sounds great. We'll do it as a TV series. I might have thought it would be a movie. Gil thinks it should be a TV series, and he knows better. So I just come up with an idea, and then Gil says where we should direct it. So that makes it easy for me, because otherwise I would flounder, because mm-hmm. there are so many places. If you have an idea for something today, Well, should you do it as a comic strip? Mm-hmm. Should you do it over the internet? Should you do it as a, we're doing something called Time Jumper for Disney, and it's called a motion comic. It's a cross between a comic book and an animated cartoon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen those on iTunes. Yeah.
So you say to yourself, should I do it as a motion comic? Should it be a television show, a movie? But I'm lucky enough to have Gil at my side, and he says, make it a motion comic, so I don't have to think, you see, and that makes it easy.
I agree. I think Mosquito Man should be a motion comic.
Yeah. Hey, I said it first.
You did say it.
Oh, I shouldn't have blurted that out.
Now
everybody's going to be rushing to write a Mosquito Man. Damn it.
Don't tell anyone.
How do you come up with Spider-Man? How do you say, let's combine man and spider? Like, how does that?
First of all, you have to start by being incredibly brilliant.
Yes.
No, what happened was, I have told this story so often that for all I know, it might even be true. But I was trying to think of a new hero, and I had done everything. We had the Thing, who was the strongest guy around. We had the Human Torch, who could burst into flame and fly. We had the Hulk. I was trying to think, what can I do that's different? And it occurred to me, while I was sitting at my desk, I saw a fly crawling on the wall. Now, I don't want you to think my house is filled with flies. This was one little fly. And I said, gee, wouldn't it be something? I said to myself, that is. I don't know that I said it out loud. I may have just thought it.
I like to think of you sitting going, wouldn't it be funny if, like, just out loud to yourself.
Pretty much. Yeah. I was almost going to say I thought to myself, but my wife always catches me and says, you can't say I thought to myself. Who else would you think to? And she's right. So it has to be I thought. If you ever hear anybody say I thought to yourself, say Stan's wife says you shouldn't say that.
Can I please just tell you, this is just as a sidetrack, you just reminded me that my dad leaves himself messages on the phone to remember to do things, but he identifies himself to himself. So when you listen to his answering machine, you hear, this is me calling me to remind me to leave out the trash. Like, who do you think is leaving you these messages to do these chores?
Your dad is a great man. So anyway, what the hell were we? Oh, yeah, so I saw this fly, and I said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if... No, I'm lying. In those days, there wasn't an expression, cool. I said, probably, wouldn't it be groovy? Wouldn't it be groovy if a superhero could stick to the wall like a fly, you know? So I said, that's a good idea, but Fly Man didn't do it for me as a name. So I went down the list, Mosquito Man, whatever insect I could think of, and then I got to Spider-Man. Now I want you to think, Spider-Man. I mean, that sounds dramatic. You know, it had to work. So I said, I'll call him Spider. I'm very good at names also. I said, I'll call him Spider-Man. And lo, a legend was born.
And
kind of gets you here.
It really does. We're taking a moment. Now, when you finally, when they started making the movies in the early 2000s, oh, it's already weird to say that. But in the early 2000s, when they made the first, of the new Spider-Man movies, did you watch it and go, yes, this is exactly, because before that, film technology wasn't in such a place where it could look the way that it did. So did you feel like it really would have taken that long to make that film?
Well, my first thought was, yeah, this is going to make me famous. But after that, no, I thought it was a great job. Sam Raimi really kept it true to the spirit of Spider-Man, and he only made one blundering mistake, but I forgive him for it. I understand how it was. He didn't make me play the part of J. Jonah Jameson, the irascible newspaper editor, and I was born to play that role. Just like I'm amazed they don't have me playing Odin in the Thor movie, but hey, that's another story.
Did you even audition for it?
They didn't even let me audition. Gave my one lousy cameo and then goodbye.
When are we going to see a more... I want to see a full-length Stan Lee feature film. I want to see starring Stan Lee.
Some idiots are doing a documentary.
Some idiots.
Oh,
So matter of fact, these idiots are doing this thing.
They're doing a documentary of my life. It's so embarrassing. It's almost finished. You'll be subjected to it probably the beginning of next year. And don't blame me. Someone else is doing it. Anyhow, what did you say? Hey, I just realized I could be looking at myself on the screen instead of staring. How do I look?
You look good.
Yeah, pretty good, huh?
Yeah, you look good all big up there.
Yeah, gee, I like that. Okay, nice. That's good. I like a close-up.
Now,
we don't need him. Just keep it on me.
Yeah, just keep it on Stan. There's your camera. Give a little kiss to the camera, Stan.
Why don't I see it? This thing here should have our picture instead of that little dumb diagram there.
That's,
I don't know what that is even.
That's a flow chart. That's some kind of flow chart.
Just what I need, a flow chart.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's basically advertising the NAB show, so I guess in case you and I forget where we are, there's a big screen right there.
Listen, I hope you're all appreciating this very scholarly discussion that we're having.
Yeah, it's some kind of flow chart. These other jerks made this thing, and then there's a mosquito guy. All right, thanks. Come on, everybody.
There are a couple people I see who aren't taking notes. We'll talk to you later.
These are all smart people with photographic memories, Stan. So you've created what is now known as the Marvel method of creating comic books. Can you just kind of give us a little bit of a walkthrough of, did you set out to create that, or did you just kind of go, yeah, I guess this is what I do, so that's the Marvel method.
I like the way he asks my questions and he answers them for me. I hope you've noticed that. Very skillful. What happened was, I was writing almost all the stories for all the characters, and fast as I am, and wonderful as I am, I was having trouble keeping up. Mm-hmm. Now, the artists were freelancers. They weren't on salary, which meant if they had nothing to draw, they weren't getting paid. So if Steve Ditko was waiting for a script for Spider-Man, and I was still writing the Hulk for Jack Kirby, let's say, Steve had nothing to do when he wasn't getting paid. So instead of me waiting until I finished the script for Jack Kirby, I would say, look, Steve, I tell you what, here's the plot I would like for Spider-Man. Let so-and-so be the villain and let this happen. You go ahead and draw it any way you want to. I'll put in the dialogue later. So I was able to give Steve something to draw while I finished writing the Kirby script. When Steve brought his script in, his artwork in, all I had to do was put in the dialogue and the captions, maybe make a change or two, but that was it. So I realized I could do that for most of the artists. I would give them the plot and let them draw it any way they wanted to, and then I would put in the dialogue. So in that way, I kept a lot of guys working at the same time, and I began to realize it's the best system of all because instead of me writing a complete script and say, panel page 2, draw a close-up of this and a long shot of that and a medium shot of that, let the artists decide what to do. That's why they're artists. They're good at it. And they all had great story senses. They knew. I was lucky. I worked with the best in the business. They made me look good, thank God. And they would tell the story visually so well. And then I would hold it all together, even if they did something that wasn't right. I could fix it the way I did the dialogue and the captions. So it was the fastest way to work, and it turned out to be the best. I was getting the best of the artist, and they were always getting the best of me, so that never changed. And it turned out pretty good.
I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing approach, and an approach that just does not happen enough in the business where they say, hey, let's let these creative people do what they're supposed to do creatively. Everything is so micromanaged now. I mean, do you think that it's possible for us to get back to a place where they're letting artists create work without having to go through marketing people? And
it's not a case of a place, it's just a case of who's in charge. If someone is in charge, whether it's a movie, a television show, a comic book company, or anything, if they're smart enough to be able to recognize who's really got talent in a certain area and let those people go and make the decisions in the area that they're good at, then that's the way to do it. But when you talk about micromanaging, so often people in charge, they want to say how a thing should be done, even though the guy doing it might be better qualified than they are. But, you know, I'm paying your salary, you do it my way. Mm-hmm. There you go. How do you? Why am I so serious? I liked it better before.
You liked it better before when I was answering questions I was asking you.
Yeah, I like the way you answered them.
Stan, how do you feel you created Spider-Man? I'm going to guess you said that it was when you saw a fly on the wall. Like, oh, I'm the worst interviewer ever. I want to. By the way, is this? I just want to make sure. Is this a 45-minute panel? I want to make sure we give time for people to do Q&A.
I gotta go.
Oh my God, Stan, wait! Puff of smoke, you're gone. Does anyone? Do we have an hour? Or do we have 45? Would take an hour. All right, lady in the front that doesn't work here.
Did you hear the groans when you said an hour? Oh, geez, not another 15 minutes.
Forget it, 4-hour Stan Lee marathon. We're not... Well, there's nothing else to do in Vegas at this hour. You need to stay inside where it's air-conditioned.
Nothing to do in Vegas. Wait, I have to talk to you after the show.
Vegas is weird to me because I don't drink or gamble. So for me, I just see the Matrix code behind a lot of Vegas. I'm like, oh, it's icky.
But, this is the one man on the face of the earth that doesn't drink or gamble.
Oh, I'm not saying I never did, but at one point I did it for 3 or 4 lifetimes. So do it now. And now let's take a moment and talk about our feelings. So I was showing you the iPad back in our speaker cubicle.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you feel that, how do you feel technology is helping or changing or maybe hurting comics?
Oh, no, nothing hurts anything. Everything changes things. I think there'll always be comics, just the way there'll always be books, there'll always be movies, there'll always be television. I remember when TV first came out, everybody said, oh, that's the end of books. Nobody is ever going to read a book. They're going to just stay looking at their TV screen. There's still a book business. There will still, whether this is good or bad, I don't know, but there'll always be comics. They may not be as big as they were, or they may someday be bigger than they were. You know, a lot of these movies that are based on comics make people who enjoyed the movie want to go and read the comic book mm-hmm. series. So it works both ways. One hand washes the other. And I love technology. I don't understand it. I'm no good at working anything. But I love the idea of all these new things, and all that they do is keep people interested in all the new ways of looking at a story or being involved in a story. And with video games, they're part of the story. So it's a fascinating age we live in. It really is.
It's really cool. Like, yeah, the Marvel app on the iPad, when you swipe across, it takes you through the panels like you're actually reading the comic book, which is still a completely different experience. Yeah. Than you would have before.
And wait till you see Time Jumper.
Yes.
You haven't seen that
when
yet.
When is that? When is Time Jumper coming?
Because you'd be raving about it if you had seen it. I got to mention that it's a Disney co-production with us. Time Jumper is, you can see it on your telephones now, and eventually it'll be all over. They're wondering whether they should make it a TV series or a feature film or
That's why you got Gil. Gil's going to make that
That's
call.
That's right, Gil figured
Gil's,
that
Gil's
out.
Gil's going to make that call.
G-I-L-L. He spells it G-I-L-L.
Good note.
He gets very upset if you get it wrong.
Double L. G-I-double-L.
And there's a whole story behind that, but that'll be for another interview, for another conversation.
Sam, we got 3 more hours. You might as well tell the Gil story. Well, I want to, yeah, we have about 15 minutes left. I just want to make sure that we get a few questions from the audience.
That'll destroy me.
I don't want
They've been waiting for their chance to get even.
This is some of the Ferguson army plants are in the audience. Ferguson rules! And he's going to run out. Like, good victory, sir. All right, I think I covered mainly everything that I wanted, so I don't want to be selfish and take a break.
Yeah, you're better off than me, though. You got all your notes on a piece of paper.
I didn't follow any of them, to be honest with you.
Helpless, unarmed.
The only thing I followed was the Craig Ferguson quote that I wrote down.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, exactly. All right, this gentleman was spry and got to the mic first. What is your name, sir?
My name is Marcelo. I'm from Houston, Texas.
Marcelo from Houston, Texas. And what is your question for Mr. Stan Lee?
Well, first of all, Stan, I've been reading Marvel since 1973, since I was 8 years old. And I love comics. I have like 10,000 of them. My question is specifically what got me into comics at that time. Now, this is a real geek question. Was the whole movement in the horror comics, and Marvel did that whole spin on horror comics where, you know, it wasn't just the monster, it was the human behind the monster. And of course, that kind of went away in the, like, as we get towards the 80s. I'm just sort of curious on your spin on the whole monsters in comics and especially the Marvel monsters. What do you think the future is there?
All right, so Marcello was a huge, huge horror comic fan.
The reason that he's repeating it, even though I look as though I'm perfect in every way, my hearing isn't as good as it used to be. I could hear you, but it's hard for the words to focus through the microphone. So he'll repeat it, so don't be offended. It's not that I'm not listening.
Fair enough.
Go ahead. What the hell did he say?
I also have the power to repeat it in as derisive a manner as possible. Marcello was all like, "What's up with horror comics?" That's how he sounds.
Nice.
I'm from Houston, Texas.
Can I go home now?
And sleep. All right. So he wants to know, like, what's the horror comics. He was fascinated by the human behind the monster stories, and he feels like that kind of went away in the 80s. So, you know, where do you see horror comics sort of in the whole comic sphere?
Oh, they never went away. We don't publish them the way we used to, but horror is a great field. People love it. They love horror movies, and the chances are Marvel will be bringing out some horror comics. And don't worry, if Marvel doesn't, POW Entertainment will,
nice.
My little company. So keep your eye peeled for the new horror.
All
That's
right,
a good
thank
idea.
You.
I hadn't thought of horror. That guy is all right. I'm going to do a horror book, yeah.
That guy's onto something down there in Texas.
Thank you.
And then Marcella was like, "You should make a horror comic." I make a merry day. What is your name, sir?
My name is Grant.
Grant, how are you?
I am good.
Where are you from?
Well, there's a line there, too.
Yeah, there's a...
Nice, Dan.
We're kind of double-fisting audience style here.
Well, we better go fast because there's a lot of people.
Right. Yes, what is your name?
I feel like we're having an Alex Grant. Trebek moment here. I'm from Wheeling, Illinois, in Chicago.
You're from Illinois? Okay, Illinois.
Yes.
Great.
Okay. Hi.
All right, you guys can fight out in the hall. We got a question, man.
All right. Actual question. Well, first I want to say I'm glad you called him Spider-Man and not Spider-Boy because he was technically in high school. You could have called him Spider-Team, but I can't tell people. I read Spider-Boy, so thank you for that.
He was very thankful that you didn't call him Spider-Boy because he was technically in high school.
I got to tell you, I hate little junior sidekicks, you know? There's no way I would have called him Spider-Boy.
These annoying Robin-sized sidekicks.
I used to think, if ever I were a superhero, there's no way on God's earth I would pal around with a teenager. At the very least, people would talk.
Yeah. That is borderline illegal.
Quick question.
Yes.
On the intellectual property question about remixes, video mashups. There's a lot of popular videos on YouTube with Marvel characters on there, and some people aren't just using it for amateur use. They're actually making a little bit of money off of the overlay advertising. What is your position on people taking other people's creative content, repurposing as a new piece of artwork?
I heard people and other people.
Well, he's talking about, okay, I'll use a perfect example. Like, there was this really cool thing on YouTube where they made called Marvel Zombies. So they made all these Marvel superheroes as zombies, and they shot a little film, and it was great. So he's saying if someone makes a film that's repurposing characters they don't own, like Marvel characters, and then benefiting from advertising on YouTube, you know, what's your stance on that? How do you, you know...
Oh, it wasn't the Marvel people who did the Marvel...
No. I mean, you know, the internet is just replete with...
Well, my only attitude there is I'm not a lawyer. It doesn't bother me, and I figure it helps Marvel because it's just more advertising and more promotion, and it'll make people maybe who weren't interested in Marvel a little bit interested if they like the Marvel zombies. So it's fine with me, but again, I'm not a lawyer. Right now, there may be a whole team of lawyers working on this. I don't know.
And then that guy's going to use his defense. Stan Lee said I could do it.
I just won't say it in that kind of voice, but I'll say that.
Thanks, Grant. What is your name, sir?
Hi, my name's Brad. I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Taking a little MySpace picture there, Brad?
Yeah, put this up on video. Thank you, sir. I'm a Marvel zombie, also from back in the day. I just wanted to thank you for years and years of entertainment
See, that I heard. When people say nice things, you're very welcome.
You've given me so much. There's nothing I can give back to you except, and I understand if the answer is no, a man hug. Are you up for a man hug?
I missed that part.
Oh, come on, don't leave me hanging.
What's your name again?
Brad.
Brad wants to know if you'll kick him squarely in the groin.
See me after the conversation.
He wanted to give you a man hug, but I don't know if we can allow that because I don't want to set the precedent that everyone can come up and start groping Stan.
I wasn't going to grope him. Listen, no, thank you, Stan, for everything you've done and given to me personally.
Thank you. We're going to consider that a verbal man hug.
A verbal man hug. I know, I'm a brutal authoritarian. I'm tough but fair. What's your name?
You're like drunk with power. You can say,
I am.
You can make the decisions. It's
throw
wonderful.
Her out! This poor lady's like, what did I do? What's your name, sir?
Hi, my name is Stefan Stuncha.
Oh, what radio station do you work at? He's got a real nice voice.
Don't you wish you did?
I wish I did, yeah.
I'm from Rio, Brazil.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm huge.
I enjoy your waxing.
Thank you.
He's from Brazil.
I've been keeping track. You laughed a little louder at what he said than at what I've been saying. You're all in trouble.
What's your question?
First of all, you know, thank you for all of that he said. And
oh, good.
Probably because of comics, I dedicated my life to be and do good. So we're out there. And first of all, I admire the way that not only you started all the comics, but the way you kept into it and you still develop. And it's still helping everyone.
I think what he's saying is that he's inspired by the fact that you never gave up. Like, you, it's clear that you love what you do, and you've continued to make comics after all these years.
Well, that's not exactly it. You see, my wife is very extravagant, and I haven't been able to give up. But thank you very much.
I'm starting a bit of a comic book and cartoon show myself, and I wonder what an aspiring artist or writer should do or where to go, since everything is so closed these days.
He wants to know, as an aspiring writer, artist, what should he do to try to break into the business, because he feels that it's very closed off to new people. So is there anything you can do?
It is very difficult. As you can imagine, everybody wants to write comics now because A, it pays pretty well, but B, if your comic book turns into a movie, it's pretty good for you if you've created and written the character. So you're competing with some of the top writers in America. And I'd say about the only way you can become a writer for comics now, at least for a big comic book company, is to write something in another field that does well. Like, if you write a novel that sells well, and then you go up to the office and you show the editor, look at that, I've got this novel. He figures, well, you're a pro, I'll give you a try. But just somebody who really has no credit, so to speak, to come up to the office, unless you're a friend of the editor's or there's a real unusual circumstance, it is difficult. An artist is different, because if you're an artist, you can show a drawing you've made, and in a second, the editor can tell, wow, this is great, I want to use this guy. But you can never tell if writing is great unless you sit and you read the whole damn thing, and nobody has time to do that. And that's why it is tough for a writer today.
Sorry. No.
And I'm sorry to have to say that, but
no,
it really is.
But honestly, I mean, especially now with technology, I mean, you can create your own stuff. You can put it online. People can see it. I mean, I feel like we're in a place where young artists and young writers have the ability to show their work in a way that was never possible.
He's right. If you can team up with an artist and write something and have the artist draw it and then put it on the web somewhere and have people notice it, that is one way. I mean, it's a long shot, but that is one way that it might work.
I mean, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of content on the internet. There's a lot of people making stuff, but ultimately, good stuff rises to the top. I mean, it cuts through that din. So, you know, just start making it. I would say don't ask questions. Just start doing it. Would be the advice that was not asked of me. Sorry.
Thank you.
Just realized, like, this is not my panel at all. What am I doing?
I don't know what I'm doing here either.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What is your name, sir?
Paul Kemp from San Diego. Good morning,
Paul
Stan.
From San Diego.
Yes, I'm one of those folks who goes to the Comic-Con thing.
When he says, what is your name, do you get a little nervous? Like, if I say the wrong name, he may not talk to me.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're not Paul. Next.
So Paul Kemp from Digital Production Buzz. We are the makers of the official podcast for the NAB show. And a quick question, basically, I wanted to get your thoughts on the NAB show and the wonderful digital tech geeks that you see here in this room.
He wants to get your impressions of the NAB show and just the tech geeks that you see in the room.
Well, I got to tell you, you've been one of the best audiences and most tolerant audiences I've ever spoken to. I think you guys are great. I don't know who you are, and with the bright light, I can't really see you. But your reactions are great, and you seem happy, so that's very important. See, if he's happy, I know I'm doing okay.
I'm 100% happy. This was a...
I don't know if Craig Ferguson is happy.
Well, war is not happy between you and Craig. No, this is a dream come true for me. What did you have a question?
Oh, well, so I wanted to get what his thoughts were about the NAB show, which he provided.
Sure.
So, are you going to be around later for
drinks?
Yep, drinks, cocktails, a little gambling.
That's what it sounded like it was going. He wants to know if you're hanging out at the show later.
No, as a matter of fact, right after this, I have to fly back to L.A. because there's this much work that has piled up, and it was a great sacrifice on my part to come here, but I couldn't give up a chance to impart some of my knowledge, some of my talent, a little of the greatness that I'm able to bestow upon you. I felt I owed it to you, and the expressions on your faces, which I can't see, is reward enough for me.
So we have time for a couple more questions. What is your name, sir?
My name is Stephen McCall.
That's correct.
Yes. I knew it. Okay. Well, my question is that, Stan, a lot of people look up to your superheroes that you created as role models. There's Spider-Man and its emphasis on...
I heard Iron Man.
Spider-Man and its emphasis on power and responsibility. There's X-Men and their whole themes of tolerance and social justice, and it was made in the Civil Rights Movement.
All right, wait. Hey, let me go back to chapter one. He was saying, he's talking about the superheroes you've created. So Spider-Man focuses on power and responsibility, whereas X-Men focuses on tolerance.
Yeah. Do you feel any way responsible for the impact your characters have had on the readers?
Oh, he's saying, like, the characters as role models. You know, what do you feel about the impact that they've had on young readers as actually, you know, like, oh, I should be responsible, I should be tolerant, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, all I can tell you, to be serious for a moment, which is rather painful, a lot of people do come over to me and they say, gee, I want to thank you for the stuff you wrote years ago because it meant so much to me and it affected my thinking and it affected... And when I was unhappy and confused and I read these stories and I felt better, I'm not sure how that happened because I wasn't trying to write therapeutic stories, but if people felt that way, I'm very glad about it. With Spider-Man, with the X-Men, there was an underlying theme of anti-bigotry, but that was an underlying theme. I was really mostly trying to just tell an exciting story. And with Spider-Man, I was, again, trying to tell a story that people would enjoy reading. But I find no matter what you write, people read things into it that you may not even have consciously put there. And if you found any elements in these stories that were good or beneficial or good for you, I'm delighted. I don't know what else to say.
That was good.
And that's unusual for me.
I think we have time for one more question.
Okay, thank you. First of all, Stan, an absolute pleasure to be able to speak to you today. My name is Tim. I'm all the way from Henderson, Nevada.
He just offered it. Tim's from Henderson, Nevada. Mm-hmm.
Just a little ways away. What I wanted to ask you about was Disney's acquisition of Marvel. And this week, I think the Disney store announced that they were going to have Iron Man merchandise in the stores. And you can have your opinion on how good a fit that is and how it benefits both Disney and Marvel.
He's asking about your opinion on Iron Man being in the Disney stores and Disney's acquisition of Marvel. You know, does that?
I think the Disney acquisition of Marvel is a very good thing. The people at Disney are very smart and they're very powerful. And they know enough to let Marvel do what Marvel does. They don't interfere. But now Marvel has all of the weight and power of the Disney distribution machine and all the things that Disney can offer. A lot of people think, oh, now Spider-Man is going to have Mickey Mouse ears. It's nothing like that. Nothing will change except for the better. Marvel will do what Marvel does, but they've got Disney behind them supporting them. And I've worked now with the Disney people for a few years, and I've got to tell you, they're great. They're very creative, they're very understanding, they know the market, they know what they're doing, and it's a good thing. It's nothing to be concerned about if you like Marvel.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think we're out of time for questions, but forget about Disney and Marvel. I want to hear the future of POW. I want to know, Time Jumper, you said, is coming out. What else can we expect from POW?
This is the most frustrating question I've ever heard because...
I take it back.
No, that's okay. At POW Entertainment, which is my new little company, and it's interesting because it's in between Marvel, there's POW, and there's Disney, and the idea of POW being there with Marvel and Disney, it cracks me up. Because we're still just a little company, but we have a number of movies in development at Disney. We have some TV shows in development, animated cartoons in development, and we're working on comic books. And here's the frustrating part. I'm not allowed to talk about any because, as you can imagine, the movie studio wants to make the first announcement when the thing comes out. The TV studio wants to make the first announcement. So all I can say is we're working on a lot of stuff which doesn't tell you any more than you knew before, and it frustrates the hell out of me.
What if we just start making guesses? We'd be like,
If I do that, I'll get in trouble.
Okay, all right, all right. Well, I do want to say, you all should follow Stan Lee on Twitter. He is an amazing tweeter. He is Smilin' Stan Lee, S-M-I-L-I-N, Stan Lee.
I didn't know you knew that.
I'm following you.
Wow.
Of course I'm following you.
You're the one.
Yeah. No, because there's already a Stan Lee, and he's just a guy who happens to be named Stan Lee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That bastard.
I'll sue.
Sue him. It's technically not your name either, but that's all right. That's fine.
No, it is my name.
Oh, you changed it.
Legally.
You changed it. All right.
You know, when I sign autographs, and sometimes I have to do a lot of them, I think to myself, I'm glad my name isn't Engelbert Humperdinck. Stan Lee is so easy.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to come out here. And then also, just for me, as a creative-y type person, I love the idea that you've been doing what you love all these years. You're not like the classic tortured artist. You're a genuinely nice guy who's
adorable.
Lovely. Lovely guy.
And I wish I were someone else so that I could be friends with me. Honest to God.
I'll bet you envy me for being able to meet you for the first time.
Boy, you are the luckiest guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, please have a huge hand for Mr. Stan Lee.
Thank you. Hey, and thank you.
Oh, fantastic.
He's great.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.